About 300 years ago, there was a lady by the name of Anna the First. Anna the First was a leader in Russia, and between the years of 1739 and 1740, she ordered that an ice palace be built. You may have heard of St. Petersburg, Russia, and this is where this ice palace was built. Now this palace, if we could go back and look at it, according to the descriptions, it had some ice sculptures. Inside the palace, there was an ice bed. There was an ice mattress, and they even said had ice pillows. During Anna's time in power, there was a prince in this area that decided that he wanted a wife. So the prince got married. And the marriage was one that Anna didn't approve of because the prince was from the Eastern Orthodox faith, and his wife was from the Catholic faith. And I mean, that's like mixing oil and water. They just don't go together, and that really upset Anna. Because this prince married someone that Anna did not approve of, history says that she decided to punish the prince. She decided that she was going to make the prince a court jester, or a fool, the comedian, for her to come and be entertained by. Well, the wife of the prince died. And after that happened, Anna used her power, she used her position to say to the prince, "You're going to marry again. But this time when you marry, I'm going to select your wife." And the wife that was selected was an old hag. I don't know exactly what she looked like, but I mean, she was rough from what history says. And Anna made sure she forced these two to get married. And then after the wedding, she put the two, the new couple, on public display. History says the newlyweds, they were dressed as clowns. Not because they wanted that, but this is what Anna ordered. They rode on an elephant through the town, and they were followed by, according to history, farm animals and circus freaks. If this were not bad enough, Anna decided to impose some further cruelty. She made sure that they were stripped of their clothes. And then she sent them into that ice house she had built under heavy guard and said, "You're going to spend the night there." History tells us that the couple managed to survive because the bride was willing to trade her pearl necklace for a guard's sheepskin coat. And that's how they got through the night. Now, I share this story and all the unusual details associated with it to make this point. There are people at times who receive power, or they receive the gift, or something else, and they misuse, they abuse, they misapply what they receive. They're not a good steward of it. In our country, in our time, we have plenty of examples of where this happens. People receive power. Maybe it's a government job. Maybe it's a job within a very powerful, influential company. And people in the government or in the secular world, they abuse that power. They misuse their authority. When we look at the Bible, in fact, the part of the Bible that we've been studying on Sunday nights, we find an abuse of gifts and even power. But before we get there, I want to turn our attention, and I'm not going to read from 1 Corinthians 14, but I do want to cite some things from that chapter. 1 Corinthians 14, in the New Testament, we have some information about people abusing some of the items God had given them. Now, you may remember that in 1 Corinthians 14, this is kind of part 3 of a 3-section chapter that goes together. Paul talks about, in 1 Corinthians 12, some things related to spiritual gifts, then love and how that's superior to spiritual gifts in 1 Corinthians 13, and then Paul has some directives about spiritual gifts in 1 Corinthians chapter 14. Now, those spiritual gifts had come from God. God had empowered his people. God had blessed his people with certain things, and Paul comes along and says, God has given you these gifts. He's endowed you with supernatural abilities, but let me tell you, Corinthians, what you're doing. You're abusing God's gifts. Because you're misusing, you're misappropriating what God has given you. This is wrong and this needs to be corrected. Paul in 1 Corinthians 14 offers multiple illustrations of how the Corinthians were abusing God's gifts. 1 Corinthians 14 verse 29. He has here some rules about prophets. Now, you would think if anybody would have gotten it right, the prophets, the people who had the ability to prophesy, they would not have abused God's gifts. But this was not what was taking place at Corinth. Then, 1 Corinthians chapter 14, verses 28 and 30. Here we, in both of these verses, have the word silence. There were times where some mouths needed to be shut in the Corinthian assemblies. But people, they were making claims like, well, the Spirit is within me and the Spirit is compelling me to prophesy or speak in tongues or use some of the other spiritual gifts. And I've just got to let it go. I've got to let the Spirit take control of the situation. And Paul said, you are abusing the Spirit of God. You're misapplying, you're misappropriating that gift. Things were so bad that in the final verse of this chapter, 1 Corinthians 14:40, Paul said, let all things be done decently and in order. So here we have not only gifts from God, but gifts from God being used in the context of worship. They were being misapplied, misused, and Paul had to deal with this topic. Well, if we were to start looking through the Bible and find some other examples of where people misapplied or misused God's gifts, we could go well beyond 1 Corinthians 14. In fact, we could go back to the part of the Bible, Exodus, that we've been looking at in recent weeks. Now, if you've been here on Sunday nights, you know that we've been talking about Israel's final exodus from the Egyptians. They were leaving slavery so that they can head into freedom. 2 weeks ago, if you were here on Sunday night, we talked about the fact that God makes promises and God keeps His promises. If you were here last week, one of the promises that God had made was to Abram that your descendants are going to be in this land, they're going to be as slaves, and then they're going to be freed. God kept that promise, and God gave His people a great victory. We talked about victory last Sunday night. Now, the promises, the victory, lead us to where we want to be tonight. And that is after God's promises have been kept. And sometimes after a person receives a victory, or maybe it's just a blessing from God, it is possible for that victory, it's possible for that divine blessing to be misused. We've seen it from 1 Corinthians 14, but now let's think about what we know from the book of Exodus. It's also been pointed out over the last week or two that when God's people left Egypt, they came out with gold. They had silver and clothing, but they also had gold. And that was one of the things God had promised Abram. They're going to end up with a great deal of wealth. Well, that promise was kept, and it was kept in a great, great way. But here's where we are tonight. God promised that wealth. God delivered that wealth. But the question tonight is, what did Israel do with that wealth? Did Israel take that wealth and deal with it in a good way? Or did the nation of Israel take that wealth that God had blessed them with, and did they somehow misappropriate it? Did they misuse it? Did they somehow abuse it, like what we saw from 1 Corinthians chapter 14? Well, the answer to this question is found about 20 chapters from where we left off in the following weeks. That is, we're going to be looking at Exodus chapter 32. Now, if you want to turn over there, you'll find, and I'm going to read the part of the first verse in just a second, but you'll find in Exodus 32 that Moses is up in the mountain. The people have been waiting for him a little while, and they have come to the conclusion that Moses, we don't know what's happened to him, Moses has been delayed, so we need to take action. Exodus 32 verse 1 says that Aaron was still down amongst the people, and the people decided that they were going to come to Aaron. They were congregating around him, and this is what they said to him. They said, middle of verse 1, up. Aaron, get up. We want you to make us gods. And we want you to make us gods which will go before us, for as this Moses, the man that brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we know not what has become of him. Well, that's pretty clear what the people had an interest in. They wanted gods. They wanted pagan gods to go before them. Now, there is, I think, a sermon or two in the requests made by the people, but we don't want to look at those possible topics tonight. The people wanted gods, and these are the same folks that God had recently delivered from Egyptian bondage. These were the same people who had seen the plagues that God had inflicted on the Egyptians. And then, as was pointed out last Sunday night, as the Hebrews are marching, if you will, out of Egypt, what are they looking at? They're looking at the Egyptians bury the dead. Now, that had to be a sight which stuck with the people, presumably, for life. They've already seen 10 plagues, and now as they're going out laden with clothing, laden with silver, laden with gold, they're seeing the great victory that God has given them over their enemies. That is, they are digging graves, they are burying their loved ones, the firstborn are going into the ground. God gave His people a great, great blessing and victory. He gave them a great gift. And that gift was, they were eyewitnesses to some of the most fantastic history that's ever taken place on the earth. But you know, the Israelites decided that they were going to abuse God's gift. And not only abuse it, but they were going to misuse it in the worst kinds of ways. Now, Aaron should have stood up and said, this is wrong. You are asking me to abuse the blessing that God has given you as far as the gold, and I'm not going to do that. But the Bible says that's not what Aaron decided to do. Let's look at that second verse in Exodus chapter 32. That passage says, and Aaron said unto them, I want you to break off the golden rings which are in the ears of your wives, of your sons, and of your daughters, and bring them unto me. God's people had left Egypt with gold, And now we see one of the things that his people were doing with part of that gold. Now, if you'd like to follow along a little bit, I'm going to come back to Exodus 32 in just a minute. So I'm going to keep my finger here, stay in the same book, but I'm going to back up about 12 chapters and go back to Exodus chapter 20. That's more than 12, but Exodus chapter 20, and look at verse 23. Exodus 20, verse 23. There's some information here about the gold that I had not noticed until I started to put this material together this past week. And I hope to connect some dots for you so that you can see something that I thought was pretty fascinating. All right, the 23rd verse from Exodus chapter 20. God says, "Ye shall not make other gods with me." God says, "I'm your God. And because I'm your God, you don't need any others. You can't have any others. I am the only one that's God for you. You shall not make other gods." And then God specifies some information regarding idols. He said, "I don't want you to make other gods out of silver." And then God said, "Gold," there's that word again, that element, that precious metal. God said, "I also don't want you to make any gods out of gold. Ye shall not make unto you." Now, let me put this together for you. Back in Exodus 11 and Exodus chapter 12, God is giving his people the gold. We don't read about gold until we get over here to Exodus chapter 20. They get the gold, Exodus 11 and 12. God does not say another word about gold until Exodus chapter 20. And the verse that I just read, it's in this next verse where God says, "You've got the gold. Now let me tell you something. Don't misuse it. I've given you this gift, and I don't want you to misappropriate this and use it in a way such as idolatry." God knew that his people, once they receive this, that they could easily succumb to temptation. So he warns them about the gold. Now, as we follow the idea of gold, Exodus 11 and 12, to get the gold. Exodus chapter 20, God warns you about what not to use the gold for. And then you've got over here, Exodus chapter 32, where we've got them building a golden calf. But between Exodus chapter 20, where we have the warning, and way over here in Exodus chapter 32, the word gold is used in some other passages. So, I'm not going to read those, but let me highlight that for you. Between Exodus 20 and Exodus chapter 32, you have some information in this book which talks about building something called a tabernacle. This was the portable place of worship. So God says, "I've given you the gold. Here's not how to use it. Don't use it in this way, but you can use it in this way." This tabernacle, this portable place of worship, between Exodus 20, Exodus chapter 32, use the gold, at least some of the gold, to build this portable structure. All right, so that's kind of how you see the gold, the word gold, being used in this book. Now let's go back to Exodus chapter 32. If you kept your finger there, we've gone through the first two verses. Now I want to look at verses 3 and 4. "And all the people break off the golden rings which were in their ears, and brought them unto Aaron, and he received it at their hand, and fashioned it with the graving tool, and made a molten calf. And they said, 'These are thy gods, O Israel, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt.'" Now here's the dots that I want to connect. What do we find in 1 Corinthians chapter 14? The abuse of God's gifts. What do we find with the gold back here in the book of Exodus? An abuse of God's gifts. When we look at the two abuses, one in the New Testament, one in the Old, do we find any differences? Yes, we do. When we look in 1 Corinthians 14, the abuse was a spiritual abuse. It was a spiritual blessing. It was a spiritual ability that God's people misused. When we look back here in the book of Exodus, what do we find? Not so much a spiritual matter, but it is material goods. It is wealth. So we can draw a couple of conclusions from that. We can say it's possible, when it comes to the physical things of this life, to abuse them. When it comes to the spiritual matters of this life, it's also possible to abuse them. We would also point out that in 1 Corinthians 14, Exodus, we have God's people who are the ones who are doing the abusing. Now, having laid all that out, let's make some points of application. As we go through our life and we're trying to live the Christian life, it is not uncommon to find or come across situations where there is an abuse of power. It may be within the company that we're working for. Somebody is involved with theft. And he used his position as treasurer. He used his position as controller. He used his position as a manager to steal from the company. Or maybe it is in government and there is an official that has just done all kinds of bad things. And as we read that story in the paper, as we hear that story on the radio, as we watch the news report that, and we just step back and say, "Oh, how awful. That person is so bad. That person is a terrible criminal. Look at the liberties that he or she took, and I would never live my life in that kind of way. I am not like those corrupt politicians. If I were in power, if I had that job, the world would be a lot different. I think there are a lot of Christians who sit back and reason in that way when they hear these kinds of stories. And maybe there is a great deal of truth in that. For example, if we were in that job, we might not embezzle millions of dollars. The company might not be closing had we been in charge of it. But while those things are true, before we puff out our chest and say, look at how righteous I am, I do not abuse those kinds of things. Let's step back. And let's look inwardly for just a few moments. Each one of us has a little gift known as time. We all get the same amount. As long as we're on this earth, we all have 24 hours in the day. As we look back at today, as we look back at the last week, as we look back on the days that have thus far passed in this year, have there been some times where we've abused time? Now that may not be like embezzling $1 million from a company, but it still is a gift from God that is time. And it's possible to abuse this particular gift. Paul recognized this, among other truths, in the book of Ephesians, chapter 5, verse 16. He said, I want you to redeem the time. I want you to, that expression means, I want you to make full use of the time and the opportunities that you have. Don't abuse time. Wasting time is, in a very real sense, abusing a gift from God. Now, having said that, let me make this disclaimer. I do not want to leave the impression that I utilize every second that's available to me in my life in a perfect way. I don't. And I don't know that anybody is going to be successful in this regard. However, we can be mindful of the fact that God has blessed us with various things, one of which is time. And because of that, we want to make sure that we use that to the fullest potential. We want to try to avoid instances of where that is somehow abused. Thinking about items that we can abuse, and in some respects be just as guilty as far as the general sin of the fellow who's embezzling from the government or stealing company time, things like that. What about the physical body? Is it possible for us as an individual to abuse the body that we have? It is. The body can be abused in a lot of ways. There was a king in Israel, the first king. That was Saul, of course. 1 Chronicles chapter 10, verse 4. That's one account of it. You can find it mentioned one other time in the Bible. He asked to be killed by his armor bearer. He said, I want to be slain. Kill me. He said, I don't want to be abused by my enemies. So there was that kind of abuse, which was torture. Torture is still something in our world, but that's not the only way to abuse a body. It's possible to abuse the human body by putting a variety of harmful substances into it. Overeating is one way to damage the body. It's also possible to put poor nutrition into the body. And there is a sense in which the body can be damaged in that way. Well, somebody says, well, that doesn't matter to me. It's my body and I'm going to do what I want with it. Well, that's not what God says. 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 20 says, our body is not our own. And then if you back up a little bit, 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 19, Paul reminded the Corinthians of how the body, physically, is a temple. In our world, we know that we have some people, maybe some of our friends, maybe we spend some time with them, but they care for their bodies in a way that is very, very careful. I've met a few people over my lifetime who would rather die than eat a box of French fries from a burger joint. They care about their body that much. That's not going to go anywhere near my body. I don't even want to smell the stuff. So there are some people who, when it comes to health, they are health-wise very, very conscious about every item that they eat, the calorie content, and all those kinds of things. Then, related to that, we have some individuals who are very committed to working out at the gym. No junk for my body when it comes to food. Well, they don't want to make sure that their body is not abused in some kind of way. Now, we may not train our body to such a degree where, when we hit 70 years old, we're capable of running a four-minute mile. I'm not sure, it's just kind of like time. Nobody, or a lot of people are simply not going to go to that level or to that degree. But at the same time, as we go through life, we can make sure that we are trying to take reasonable care of our body. I was surprised a little bit yesterday, our youngest paintballer. We stopped for lunch about 12:45, and we were passing out some food and drinks, and we had a young fellow with us who I'm guessing is maybe 11, somewhere in that neighborhood, and a can of pop was offered to him. Nope, not me. And I said, well, okay. He said, I've not had this stuff in about 4 months. And I said, well, that's fine. We've got some water or some other alternatives here. And I said, would you mind me asking why? I said, is it health related? Yep, the stuff is bad for you. I said, well, okay, that's fine. But, you know, he was mindful of his body at that young age. He wanted to make sure that what he regarded as something that wasn't helpful, that he didn't have any part of that. So we're not always going to get it right. But we can take reasonable care. We can take steps that make sense, common sense steps, and be a faithful steward when it comes to using instead of abusing the items God has given to us. In trying to list some of the things that we potentially can abuse in life, another item that we have to mention as well. It is possible to misuse, misappropriate material goods, and there are a lot of ways that we can do that. It may be that we make wealth our God. The Bible in Colossians chapter 3 talks about idolatry from the standpoint of wealth. We can look at material possessions in such a way where they are the items that matter most to us. Sometime within the next week, I challenge you to take it. Well, probably won't take long, but maybe 10, 15, 20 minutes probably at most. Walk through your entire house. Or if you have an apartment, walk through your entire apartment. Go through the halls, go through the various rooms, stand there in the kitchen for a little while. And as you go through your house, you don't have to open up every dresser drawer, but go through the house and mentally look at the things on the walls, the things that maybe have been collected over the last few years, maybe the last several years. And as you walk through those rooms, ask yourself this question. What if my house burned down tomorrow? And every single possession that I'm now looking at, every photograph, every item that was created by my children, whatever it was, what would happen, how would I feel if tomorrow every single thing that I'm looking at was turned into toast? If you do that, and you, at the end of that process, sit down and think, I would be absolutely devastated. I'd be crushed. My life would just be in a state of ruin. Might it be possible that we have misused our physical wealth, that our hopes have been invested in them so greatly that we think my life would basically be over? Or would it be there are some things that I'm going to miss? I can't replace those pictures. I can't replace this item that was made by a grandchild or something else. But that's not where my dreams are. That's not where my hope is. I've not been guilty of abusing material goods. The rich farmer, remember him, Luke chapter 12? Now, there is nothing in the text to indicate that he was an unkind neighbor. There's nothing to indicate that he was cheating the IRS of his day. There's none of that. It was simply a man, he looks at what he has and he says, I have goods stored up for many years. I'm in a position to pull down my barns and build bigger barns and everything is going to be great. I'm going to be satisfied for life, set for life. Jesus said, thou fool. Here is a man who misused the wealth that he had. And today that same kind of thing can happen when it comes to material goods. Wealth can be abused. And in his case, he was unwilling to share it, unwilling to use it in proper ways. Wealth can also be used to do what was talked about earlier today. There are some people, they want to look better than everybody else. So when it comes to the hairdos or the gold that they wear or the car that they drive, those kinds of things, they want to be better than everybody else. And once again, that is a way to abuse or misuse the material possessions God has provided with us. As we think about the spiritual realm, is it also not possible in the spiritual realm to misuse or abuse some of the items that God has given to us? Yes. And here are some examples. Suppose that we have a Christian, maybe a newer Christian, maybe an older Christian. And he or she knows that there is an activity that the Bible, I mean, it just comes out and in no uncertain terms says this is wrong. But the Christian says, I know what the Bible says, but I also know what I like to do, and that is just so much fun. I'm going to do that, and I believe I'm going to get away with it because God is going to forgive me. All I have to do is, after that activity, is say, God, I'm sorry. Your grace is great. I've been saved from my sins. I want to go to heaven, and I know that you've got it covered. Are there some people like that? I can name some names. Well, what is that mindset? Is that not abusing the grace of God? Is that not living in sin and expecting God to clean things up because we're misusing His grace? That's exactly what it is. This idea is so prominent in some minds that the Bible specifically deals with it. In Romans chapter 6, verse 1, Paul opens that chapter by saying, shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? God forbid! He says God knows that trick. I know that trick. And it's a bad idea. But there are some people who think that they can abuse God's grace. Same chapter. 10 verses later, Romans chapter 6, verse 11, Paul said, count yourselves dead unto sin and alive unto God in Christ Jesus. don't abuse or misuse or try to abuse and misuse God's grace. And then if that wasn't clear enough, one verse later, Romans 6, verse 12, Paul said there, let not sin reign in your body that you should obey the lust thereof. When we think about abusing God's gifts, not only does grace come to mind, but what about the subject of forgiveness? A Christian may want forgiveness of sins from God. Oh God, please forgive me. I know that I've messed up, and this time I have really done something that's bad. But even though they want that, with the forgiveness from God, they are unwilling to forgive someone who sinned against them. That is an abuse of forgiveness. Perhaps a Christian was hurt 20 years ago and the matter has never been in his or her mind fully rectified. As the Christian prays to God for forgiveness, they still refuse to forgive that one from 2 decades ago. And yet how many times, how many sins has the person asked to be forgiven of for the last 20 years? I don't know the exact number what that might be. Not even the average, but I'm sure it's a lot more than one. Man sometimes tries to abuse the privilege of prayer by saying, God, give me this even though I'm willing to do what you describe. And that's wrong. That is a misuse of prayer. Think too, and we could look at almost any aspect of the spiritual blessings that God has for his people. What about communication with the tongue? James said, James 3 verse 10, out of the same mouth comes blessing and cursing. Now think about that. One mouth, good stuff is coming out, bad stuff is coming out. Now that just doesn't make sense. That makes as much sense as to say that you turn on the tap and out of the water you get good stuff and bad stuff. It just doesn't work that way. The change, there's no taste change. It's going to be this or that, depending on the source of the water. But the inspired writer said God's gift of speech can be abused. It can be used correctly, the blessing, or it can be used incorrectly, and he describes that with the word curse. The prominent members of our society often are guilty of abuse. Some of it's seen, some of it's uncovered, some of it not. And it's not uncommon to find people who misuse authority. And we can sit back and we can be so condemning, we can be so judgmental. And there is a time, there is a place, and certainly what we see in our world is wrong. But you know, it's also possible to be a hypocrite in that way. As we see the abuse of others, we can sit back and think, oh, how righteous I am. And that's not really true. Was it not Jesus who said there may be a beam in our own eye? So he's got some problems. Yes, she's been unethical or she's involved in criminal activity. But let's, when we hear those kinds of things, be mindful, because we can be just like the Israelites. We can be just like the Corinthians. The gold that the Egyptians gave to the Hebrews, that's been gone for a long time. The spiritual gifts that Paul talked about in 1 Corinthians chapter 14, they've also been gone for a long, long time. But we can, in our modern day and time, be just as guilty as the Israelites, the Corinthians, and at least in some respects, the people who abused power and authority in our world, just like Anna the First. That ruler abused her authority. We may not do that to the same degree, but we can be just as guilty. As we begin to go through a new week, let's, as we start a new week, think about how, maybe in the past, and maybe how even over the course of the next week, sometimes abuse God's gifts in our life. And look at those times and say, I've not thought about that in the past. And this is a problem, this is an area wherein I can do better. When we fall short, recognize those times and try to change. Will we be people who, as we try to live the best Christian lives as we possibly can, be sensitive to this and really try to not abuse the gifts, the abilities, the blessings that God has given us? As I think about this topic, I think I can safely say that the greatest abuse that a person can commit in this life is a spiritual abuse. And that is, they're given life, they're given a mind, they're given God's word, they're given everything that they need to right their relationship with God. And the person closes his word and says no. Is that not the ultimate abuse? Or it's the Christian who says, I've opened my mind, I've opened my heart to God's word, and now a time has come where I'm closing that off. The ultimate abuse of life. We don't want to fall into that category, now nor ever. The topic tonight is probably one for personal reflection rather than a public response to an invitation. But if we can help you this evening, when it comes to the topic that we've discussed or in some way, that your life has not been headed in the right direction, that you've taken a course, which leads you to abuse God's grace, His mercy, and His blessings. And you'd like some help getting off that road. Tonight we'd like to aid you to help you become a Christian by faith, repentance, confession, baptism. Or if you feel as a Christian, you need some extra help to get back on the right road. Would you let us know how we can aid you? And do that now as we stand and sing the selected song.